Are you ready? All right, good morning. I will call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, September 24th, 2013, and ask if everyone would please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, thank you and good morning. Pretty good sized agenda today, so we'll get right to it. First item on our agenda is public comment number one. This is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items that are on today's agenda. Is there anyone wishing to do so? Seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll move on to consideration of minutes. This is for the September 17th meeting.
Move approval.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion, corrections, or notations? Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Minutes for the 17th pass. Consideration of personnel actions. We have all of one form.
Move approval.
Second.
Motion and a second. Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Personnel actions pass. Next is consideration of claims for September 26th.
Under a million. Move approval.
Second.
We just need to keep them there. Motion and a second. Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Claims pass. Consent agenda, we did add utility permit 1411 and road closure 1412.
I'd move approval with noted changes.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Consent agenda passes. Public hearing items. Discussion of five-year lease purchase agreement with a principal amount of $2,949,000 for 10 motor graders to be used in the Secondary Roads Department. And I should note as we start this conversation that within 30 days of this hearing, the public does have a right to petition for an election. Darren Moon, County Engineer.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'll just give you a little more background information on this. We've been through this a couple times, but being a hearing, I'll give you background first. First, what are we looking at doing here? We have a current motor grader fleet of 13 motor graders, 6 under warranty and 7 without. We've been replacing one motor grader per year on average at an estimated cost of $295,000. Three motor graders fall out of warranty in the next 12 months, so that leaves us with three motor graders with warranty and an increasing number without warranty. Brings it up to 10. We've reduced our motor grader fleet over the past 20 years to make up for funding shortfalls, but to reduce any more would result in a noticeable reduction in services. Our risk is a major failure without warranty. We've had a few recent ones that luckily, we've been barely under warranty, but if they were not, at some average costs, $47,000 for a transmission. Well, that's for the engine. Transmission's $40,000 to $45,000, so high dollar items for repairs. Under current replacement practices, we can't reduce our motor grader numbers from 13 to 12 because we really need the three spares because we seem to use them every winter. We will not be able to reduce our financial risk with our current replacement practice. To build an equipment fund, we would have to purchase a motor grader each year and place another set amount of money in an equipment fund where I'll show you we will be able to build an equipment fund without doing that if we lease. And under this scenario, we would not be able to take advantage of part savings, fuel savings, fleet values, or trade-in values to build the equipment fund. Let me skip ahead here. This all got started when Rick and I, we met with City of Ames to look at some of their financing options. And they gave us some ideas, but what came out of that is Rick directed our department to look at some other financing options, whatever's available out there, and we stumbled across some leasing. And after we talked to some dealers about it, we noticed an article in the paper. New Mexico's already done this. It seems to be working well for them, so there is some precedent set here. Some of the benefits to leasing, all machines will be under warranty. All machines will be front wheel assist with the same controls. We're now we only have about half of our fleet with front wheel assist. All new model machines, so that they have better fuel efficiency. Lower inventory due to all machines being the same spec. More production with less downtime. More predictable budgeting, and this it'd be sustainable plan. And then savings on tire purchases would allow us to delay the DEF fuel new fuel system for at least 5 years. That would be only with the CATS motor grade. John Deere would not be able to produce the non-DEF machines up front, but CAT would be able to. And then we'd have newer spare machines, because under the latest scenario, we would keep our two newest motor graders as our spares, so that'd be a big benefit. So here's the numbers, assuming we are going to go with a CAT proposal, Caterpillar. Their proposal was a $259,000 annual payment. We trade in our current fleet, which they valued at $1.3 million. We'd put half of that towards the lease, which reduced this payment down to $259,000. So that's assuming half went into that, and the other half goes into our equipment fund. Our equipment fund's also built by parts savings over those 5 years. We won't have to spend parts that we've had to in the past, so $320,000 over the 5 years. And then we capture a net trade-in value with the CAT proposal of at least $300,000. We are being conservative with that. We think it will probably be more than $300,000 in the end, but that's a conservative value. So at the end of the 5 years, we'll have an equipment fund of almost $1.3 million, which is about the same as our trade-in value right now. So this will be a sustainable option. And we will be able to reduce our motor graders from 13 down to 12 because our motor grader fleet will be reliable, and we'll keep the two newest spares, as I mentioned before, and they are currently both under warranty. Then at the end, this is that buyback option. That's Caterpillar's number, 1.2. We can buy the motor graders back at the end of the 5 years for that value, but as we talked, what we'll probably do is actually exercise that, but then sell them right back to CAT for a lot more than that, and that's where that $300,000 of equity pops in. We'll probably sell them for $1.5 to $1.8 million. Here's our comparison of the two options that we had between Caterpillar and John Deere. We did go out to John Deere after our last meeting and asked them to submit a proposal. Their original came in at $144,000 in an annual payment. We asked them to come back in closer to this number. They opted not to do that. They said just go with our numbers and it is what it is. So they did not want to submit any updated values. So we'll stick with these. So we'll have to make our decision off of this and of what brand we go with. And as I mentioned before, if you look strictly at the annual payments, John Deere comes in cheaper by $312,000 over the 5 years. But then when you factor in the purchase option, John Deere's was much higher, $1.8 million. We could purchase them back at the 5 years. So CATS was reduced by $633,000. So overall, we feel the CAT option is a better option to go. And this is a new process for us, so you can't approve the actual CAT proposal or the Deere proposal until we have that 30-day waiting period. But it would be nice, I don't know how the board wants to do that, to give us direction on if we can make that decision now on which brand we go with, but not approve it till that 30-day waiting period's over. That's something we'll have to discuss.
So during the reality of looking at this lease option and the potential buyback, under most situations, we would probably always want to at least perhaps buy back some, if not. We most likely wouldn't buy back all because we'd be able to kind of roll them over, but there would be some that we would probably want to buy back on a regular basis after so many years.
Well, with this proposal, it's sustainable as if we traded the entire fleet in every 5 years.
Right, right.
Except the two spares. So we wouldn't be keeping anything other than the spares. So we'd have new brand new machines every 5 years.
Okay.
But you wouldn't have to do that. You could exercise the 1.2 and just keep those five-year-old machines if something had changed in our plan. So there'd be a way out of the lease program if you wanted to.
Let me make sure I can synopsize this accurately, and you help me with this, Darren, and then we'll open up the public hearing. Right now we spend $290,000 a year roughly to buy one new motor grader a year, which theoretically runs us through all our motor graders every 13 years. But it means that always at least half of our fleet will be out of warranty. We'll be spending more in parts and service. We've got different machines that are driven in different ways, so it's hard to have a driver that can just move from machine to machine to machine. Now we've got this new fuel requirement coming on board next year that's going to cost more on everything. That doesn't even take into account tires at $1,000 a piece and six tires per machine. So we got $290,000 to have an older fleet that's out of warranty, that is not consistent from machine to machine in parts or the way they're driven, or we've got $260,000 a year that looks sustainable over the long term to have all new equipment with 10 of the 12 under warranty at all times, all the machines handling the same way, and you're able to kick things down. So we're spending less money per year in order to have consistency, warranty, and be able to provide the best service possible.
Correct.
All that accurate before I open this up?
Correct, yep.
Okay.
Do you think you could repeat that again in case I missed something?
Just trying to be clear, Wayne.
Okay.
I mean, because you see the $2.5 million price tag, and you get a little sticker shock.
Well,
and I just want to make sure that people understand what we're talking about doing here. We're talking about continuing to budget roughly a little less than we've been budgeting in the past, but $250,000 a year, and you just look out as far as you can see, and, you know, with inflation taken into account, that's what we're going to continue to budget, but we're going to have newer equipment under warranty.
Well, before we begin the public hearing, let me just say that I wish you would have been on the call. Dar Sampson called, former, you know, treasurer, and of course she looks at figures and so forth, and obviously I didn't do quite as good a job as you did in the synopsis, but I did try to point out to her the thorough analysis that have gone into taking a look at this option, and that we determined that if we go down this route, there could be some tremendous savings and better equipment over the life of the machines as far as the maintenance and things of that nature. But I would have loved to have had your
Doris.
Synopsis on that. But
I'll take Doris to coffee, and her and I will talk this thing
okay,
through.
Great. I mean, she just wanted
absolutely
to understand,
and rightly
you know,
so.
the rationale behind it.
The 2.5 right. million or 2.9 million does cause a little sticker shock. Paul, any questions before we open the public hearing?
No.
All right. So at this point, we will open the public hearing on this discussion of the five-year lease purchase for 10 motor graders and ask if there is anyone that would like to address the board on this topic. Seeing no one moving, I will close the public hearing and turn to the board for direction. What I heard Darren ask is clearly we need to indicate that we're moving this way. And Jessica, I'll ask you just to help make sure the board's doing this exactly the right way. We need to indicate what direction the board is going. Darren has asked if we would be able to indicate which proposal, Cat or John Deere, that the board is most comfortable with so that we give the public a full look for the 30 days that they have to request anything additional. Jessica?
That's appropriate for you to pick which dealer at this time and then not take final action on it until the end of the 30 days.
Yep.
I would move that we move forward with the lease option with Caterpillar through Ziegler.
I would second the motion.
We have a motion and a second. Do we have any further conversation or questions? Darren, do we have anything else we need to know before we get into this 30-day period? Final action would come 30 days from now.
Okay. October 29th, you'd be able to officially approve the lease agreement.
Let me just ask, are there any different requirements in terms of this public notice that we have to do other than website? How do we make sure that the public is really aware of this during that 30-day period?
I believe this hearing was the main public notice. Yeah. I don't think we have to have another public hearing on the 29th. That would just be board action to approve the lease agreement. correct?
Yep, and there's been notice published. So, and in that notice, the 30-day petition has been specifically stated as the code requires. So,
good. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Anything else? Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. It passes. We're now in that 30-day window. Thanks, Darren. Thanks for your work on all of this.
Thank you.
Additional items, discussion and consideration with Richard Collins regarding stop signs at 250th and 670th. And Mr. Collins, I know, come on up. Welcome. Thanks for coming in today. Good morning.
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 Can you please, for the record, introduce yourself and we'll go from there.
I'm James Collins.
I'm Richard Collins.
Good morning.
I can start off by saying that Richard and I have had a couple, three phone conversations in the past couple of months regarding the intersection at 250th and I think it's 670th, near where the bridge is washed out down by Hickory Grove Lake. That road's been closed for quite some time. Mr. Collins has requested that we consider switching the stop signs around. Currently, stop signs are for the north-south traffic on 670th, but the east-west road, 250th, is actually closed, so you can't go anywhere past that intersection. And he has requested that we either switch the stop signs around or eliminate them, and I think he's also got some concerns about the future of that bridge. And yep. I just suggested last week that he come before the board, and we'll have a discussion about it.
That's outstanding. Mr. Collins, you want to update us any further than Paul has taken us right there?
Not really. I just feel like the stop signs are wrong. Weekend traffic is from Hickory Grove Campground, and the farmer should have a little say-so, I think.
Okay. Question for Mr. Collins?
Not so much as a question from him. I guess I'm just kind of wondering from the engineer's perspective or looking at general traffic plans and so forth, and when we talk about stop signs and so forth in these areas, is there potential problems that we should be aware of that may impact the overall flow if these were either switched or eliminated because of the volume of traffic coming from one direction? In other words, it appears that we would be switching and giving at least one direction more of the right of way. Is that?
Yeah,
that's that was my.
I think you're right on mark, Wayne. The next step was to get Darren. Darren, would you mind coming over and getting the cordless mic so that we can have everybody with a mic? Darren, I recall that when we had some of our initial conversations, when you first came to us and talked to us about the Hickory Grove Bridge right there, that this was one of the topics that we discussed. And at that time, as I recall, and just help me, you were concerned about changing the stop signs because we didn't know yet what was going to happen with that bridge. We were still waiting on FEMA to make some kind of action. Can you just remind us of any of those conversations, and then we'll get started in this conversation?
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah, I think.
Is this working?
Yep.
There we go. A couple of things. Yeah, we're waiting on the bridge decision. We still haven't got a decision on that. I'm actually meeting with FEMA tomorrow to look at the bridge again. That's a big determining factor in what we do with this stop situation. The other issue was traffic counts. We did go out and do some additional traffic counts on the north-south stretch. Originally, it was 70 vehicles a day to the north. It has gone up to, we count 135, so it's almost doubled. It's 110 to the south, but to the east is 340.
Okay.
And that's the through currently. It did double, but still, I don't think it's enough to justify it. When you take down a stop sign, you need to be very cautious on doing that. That stop sign's been there since, you know, most people can remember. It gets ingrained in people's memory. If you take down a stop sign, somebody assumes it's there and goes through that, then you're talking about traffic possibly meeting a dangerous situation. So that's my biggest concern. More of a minor concern is we'd have to swap four signs. We'd have to mill off the stop bars off the pavement to change them to the other direction.
Those could all be done. That's not as big a concern as the safety issue with me. But
Absolutely. But for me, Darren, and just talk me through this since I'm not an engineer. For me, I almost have the safety concern in that if I've got the straightaway, so it's a T coming together, and I've got the straightaway and I've got a stop sign there and I stop, very rarely do we have a situation where the road that's teeing in to a straightaway has a right-of-way, and so my natural inclination in pulling up to it is going to be, well, this is a three-way stop, and so, I'm going to see somebody down the road coming, and I might just go ahead and pull on out there. So my initial thought is, at a minimum, shouldn't we be at least a three-way stop there? I understand if you're hesitant to take down the stop signs that already exist, but it seems to me that it ought to be reasonable to put up one more stop sign, at least for the short term, with the straightaway gone from there, with the bridge out, and just have everybody stop. And then if we get into accident situations, more likely they're going to be a little slower. Mr. Collins, that may not address your concern, but that's my initial reaction to this.
Personally, I'd much rather put up a three-way stop than take down a stop sign that's been there for a long period of time. It doesn't warrant a three-way stop, but I'd much rather do that than take down the stop sign. But in the long term, if that bridge doesn't get replaced, yeah, I think it makes sense.
Yeah, I think we've got two conversations going here. The first one is, let's get to the end of the road on knowing what FEMA's going to do. Then this board can make a decision on what's happening on that bridge, which clearly impacts that intersection greatly. So I'm talking about kind of a short term. It seems to me that with the bridge out, it's just reasonable to have a stop. So we don't need anybody going through that intersection quickly anyway. That's the conversation I'd like to have in the short term. Mr. Collins, I'd be interested to get your impression of that thought.
I don't think you need to put another stop sign up there because the only traffic you got east and west is from the campground and the trailer park.
Okay.
And they've got concrete all the way if they go from the trailer park or Hickory Grove, the traffic, the east-west traffic, you stop them all on the road east of there to get on it.
At the other end of the mile, on the east end of the mile.
So they already stop.
So most traffic, if they're coming out of the trailer court or the campground, are going to go east.
Yeah,
they should. Pavement, and then go north to 30. Their chances are, if you're pulling a camper, you're not going to come down the hill and take the gravel road north, because it's a windy road anyway to get up to Highway 30 from there. So
you need to do your traffic counts here in another month when we start hauling grain, and you're going to see a lot different numbers.
Okay.
My concern with the stop sign, and I've talked to Richard about this, is if we switch the stop sign around, and then we decide we're going to repair the bridge and
right,
that road opens back up, then we're either going to have to switch them back the way they were, and regardless, Darren, it's going to be a couple year process anyway to get that bridge done. So now we've switched a set of stop signs around for a 2 year period, so
yep,
people are used to that. The bridge opens back up, so now we're either going to switch them back or we're going to make that a four-way stop. And
I would hope that we'd know the future of that bridge within the next few months, so we'll at least have that decision made, and if it's determined we're not replacement, then we can make the switch at that time. But
and that's where I am. I'm looking at this as, until we know what's happening with that bridge, it's hard for me to figure what the appropriate long-term solution is for that intersection, because it's going to be impacted on what we do with that. If there's no bridge there, it's a different conversation than if there is a bridge there. And so I'm just looking at trying to get us down the road of knowing what's coming. And then if we find out that bridge is gone and we're not rebuilding that, then we come back and have the conversation about, okay, long term, what does this intersection look like? I just want to get us down the road of what's the safest, most practical thing for us to do with this intersection until we figure out what's going on with the bridge.
Do we have any traffic counts for the west road before the bridge was out compared to the north road?
Heading west, it was 80, and heading north, it was 70. And that's kind of why it's always been through, that east-west direction has been through, because it's had a little bit higher traffic counts. And that must have been like that a long time ago as well.
There never was a stop sign there back until the lake was built.
Okay.
That's when the stop sign first appeared. Okay. Because I happened to be one that went to school down there, to Hickory Grove School, and there was none. Stop signs.
And you're correct, and the road was paved at that time. And
yeah.
Whenever a pavement goes in, it requires stop signs at the gravel roads, but that's a little different situation. The pavement right angled there instead of went straight through. But
right.
Okay. All right. Board, other questions, thoughts? Is there any intermediate action? Is there permanent action? Where are you guys on this?
Well, I think, getting that information regarding the future of the bridge and then having us, as soon as we're able to determine what direction this might be, that we again revisit what probably is going to be the long-term solution. I'm 100% in agreement. I don't like the idea of the possibility of switching back and forth. I think once you put something in place, I know if I was used to driving that road time and time again, it just becomes a habit type situation, and I think it could be create more problems for us in the long run. But I do think that once we do have to make that decision, we're talking about a long-term solution rather than switching back and forth.
I would think that we would need to wait and see what we're going to do with that bridge. And I, at this point, I don't think I would be in favor of switching the stop signs around, knowing that there's a good possibility that that bridge is going to be replaced. And then we'll either have to change them back or add two more stop signs at that intersection. So.
Okay, so that leaves us with what you two are saying. That leaves us with either on a temporary basis until we know what the status of the bridge is, leaving it as it sits, or putting up a temporary stop on the east-west side so that it would temporarily go to a three-way. And I'd be interested, wherever you guys are on that.
Well, what I guess my question again. Would be the advantages of the three-way and the amount of traffic. Darren, what would you say the amount of traffic would be where the other sign would actually be going in?
I'm not sure I'm following you.
You know, if we were to put a third sign there, which would be the three-way sign, basically,
okay.
What the direction that traffic is flowing, what is the approximate traffic count there?
340.
Right now it shows 340.
But there's not 340 cars coming down to that intersection a day.
No, but when you continue on west of the bridge, it's 80, so that kind of gives you a feel how much goes straight there and how much turns. It's 110 going to the south.
How much to the north then?
The DOT's counts showed 70, but when we counted after the bridge was closed, it was up to 135.
So just about doubled going north there.
So what factor does the proximity to the campsite have in terms of increased usage, especially during the camping season? Obviously, that's where you're going to have your largest volume of traffic, utilizing that area.
Yeah, the 340 is not broken down in any type of segments there, so we don't know how much is turning off where. So we can count that stretch. We can do it now or wait till we determine what we're going to do with the bridge and then count it so we see which way we want to have stopped in the future.
Darren, if this board's preference ends up being that temporarily we don't make wholesale changes with the pattern at that intersection, but we're looking at temporarily where to go. Would your recommendation to this board be that we put a third stop sign up or that we leave it exactly as it is until we know what's going on with the bridge?
I'd leave it as it. It doesn't warrant a three-way. That would require a lot more traffic count in both directions to warrant three-way.
Okay.
I just don't think that's necessary.
Okay. Other questions? Mr. Collins, either one. Anything to add before the board gives direction?
You got it. You're not going to have a fast traffic coming and with the bridge out. You got to take and turn a square corner, and if they don't stop, they're messing up pretty bad. But with us, we got grain to haul up that road. There's about six farms down there that the grain goes either to our dryer or the neighbors or whatever, and it just, it's getting disgusting. You got a semi to stop both directions, and when it can just as well be straight through there.
And Mr. Collins, I would say that regardless of where we end up here today, that depending on where things go with that Hickory Grove Bridge, this very realistically could be a conversation that comes back, Darren, in a couple months even, right? If we find out that FEMA is not going to help us with that bridge, we're going to have to make a decision about that bridge. And if we decide that that bridge isn't going in, your recommendation for that intersection is going to be a little different, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
So I hate to kick the can down the road on you, but it just, for me, it's going to be really, really difficult to start switching and then possibly switching back based on something we're going to have information on in the next month or so. So, board, no action from the board today. Leaves things exactly like they are, and I would say pending Darren coming back with new information from FEMA. If we want to take action, if you want to change anything, if you want to set any direction, we can do that. So it's your pleasure.
I think the discussion clearly outlines the best case scenario, and we need to wait until we have more information.
Good.
That's where I would leave it.
All right, so the only thing that I would add to that, Darren, I'd like you to keep the Collins informed as you know more on the FEMA bridge, and I'd like them to be part of any conversations that we have about that intersection as we look out in the future. For now, we're going to leave it just like it is. Okay, Mr. Collins, thanks for being here today. We'll keep you posted on where this goes.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next item is consideration of revised service agreement between CEC and Story County for services and maintenance of security cameras effective July 1st of 13 through June 30th of 14. And the revision includes addition of the security cameras for the administration building, and I would just add specifically in the treasurer's office, with a reduction in cost totaling $20,360. Big John, how are you today?
Good, how are you?
Good. Take us through this.
Just basically, and meeting back with CEC, I was able to renegotiate that. They brought us back down what we originally had budgeted last year, that we were going to have for this budget year, so they adjusted it back down since the new cameras are all going to be under warranty, everything that we've purchased. So we're good for a full year anyway on that. So that basically what they did is just adjusted it back. And then I just had them include, since that warranty does cover it too, include if the cameras do get put into the down here at the treasurer's office, that they would be covered for this fiscal year, and then we could take a look at if you want to break it up into separate service as we go forward in the future. If you want to have a separate agreement with CEC for handling all the cameras that would go in this building, we could do it that, or if you want to still encompass it, since it is two different. You know, we're having ours in the jail, and there's over here. So if we do want to break that up, so I just wanted to throw that out there too.
Okay. All right. So help me with. It looks to me like back on May 14th, we approved the original. This board approved the original agreement with CEC, and now you're coming back with a new agreement. And I'm sorry that I moved slowly on some of these things. I just want to make sure I understand it. The new agreement, over what we approved back in May, the new agreement now includes the security cameras down in the treasurer's office and full service and warranty and everything on those for the next through June 30th of this year. And it also reduces the price. Now tell me how you accomplished that.
Well, with the new equipment that we also bought over at the Justice Center, a lot of that also is covered under warranty. So as I met with them, I said, well, shouldn't you give us a discount on that? Since really that's all covered under warranty, so that's why they adjusted back what we originally had budgeted for without throwing in the new cameras that we're going to have at the Justice Center. So that they adjusted it back what we originally had on our original service agreement for this fiscal year that we had budgeted for, and now we've added these cameras, so they adjusted it back so that way we were able to take that just over $1,000 off. So
okay.
It's from $21,455 back down to $23,660 is what we originally had in our budget.
And that's based on the cameras that we're talking about being under warranty, and that was not reflected in the first contract that we had.
Correct.
Okay. And to be clear, this does not address ultimately who's going to pay the service contract for the treasurer's cameras. It just addresses this first year, and then we're going to have to come back at budget time and figure out what's happening with the cost of those.
Right, just to get us through this fiscal year, and then however it's going to be decided how that's going to happen. So we are that way. At least we are covered if something happens to those cameras because they're under warranty. But after next fiscal year, start of July, it's going to be a whole new agreement. Then you're going to have to figure out how we're going to do that. So,
and you'll be ready to talk to us about that during budget time.
Correct.
Questions for Big John. I mean, to me, this is about as clear as mud what all's going on.
That's kind of where I'm at. I don't understand. This $20,360 includes the cameras for the treasurer's office.
Correct.
Okay. It's my understanding that those cameras are already here.
Somewhere. Just the service part of it.
Just the service part, not the cameras themselves.
Correct.
Do we have those cameras?
They're here. I don't know if they've ever been purchased, and I know they've dropped them off, so I don't know if they're still out there waiting to be.
We've actually got possession of cameras that I don't think that this board has ever approved that we were going to put in. I don't ever remember a conversation with the treasurer about a separate camera system for her office.
Yeah, it was.
I think she asked us about it.
She asked him, but whether we had
this board, and we'll ask Shelley to go back and look. I don't think this board has ever taken action on additional security cameras for the treasurer's office, right? Is that accurate? Do you know?
Well, the discussion was all prefaced on what we were going to do in this building and then looking at that particular office and what needs. And when we, because they adjusted, they reduced the number that was originally going to be used there. So it was my understanding that that we were moving forward with the acquisition or the desire to start in this building with that particular area. And I didn't know, I was not anticipating, I didn't think that we were to come back at some point and approve a formal purchase because I thought it was all being...
Well, and let's just be clear here, Wayne, as an autonomous elected official... treasurer tweet by code has the authority to spend the dollars that are budgeted and appropriated to her
in the manner she sees fit
for her office. Right. And so this falls under that. But it also butts up against policy that we have in the county, which says any purchase of, I think it's $5,000 is going to require acknowledgement, not even approval, I don't believe. I think it's just, Lisa, is that right? It's acknowledgement from the board. And I am just 99% positive that we haven't acknowledged anything yet. Are these cameras that we're talking about putting downstairs, are they more than $5,000?
Yes.
Yes.
So we've got a little disconnect there. So what we're talking about now is a service agreement that includes service on cameras that we've never acknowledged going into the treasurer's office. And John, that's where I'm feeling a little bit of the disconnect.
Well, what I understood was that if she could come up with the money, they were going to purchase a camera. So I was just trying to get the agreement, since this is where we're trying to have it signed, is to have it there so we don't have to come back again for the agreement. But we can, if you want. Like, we can strike that out and then come back if she is able to come up with the money to purchase the cameras and we go forward.
Would it change the cost of our service agreement at all if we have those cameras or don't have those cameras? Is it?
If we strike it right now, I don't think that we'd have any issue with coming back. It's just that we'd have to probably submit another contract for another amendment if we basically renegotiate it again. I'm sure they would include it in there because it is under warranty. So it'd just be a matter of having the wording put in there saying that they would cover it for this period of time to this period of time since it's under warranty.
Okay. Jessica, sorry to do this to you. Can you give us any legal advice at all in putting the cart before the horse? Because that's a little what it feels.
It sounds like it's more of the documentation of the process of acknowledging or approving the actual purchase of the cameras, which I don't think we've done.
I think it's actually probably a little bit more than that. I mean, when this conversation all started, These were used cameras that were being taken out of the sheriff's office.
Correct.
And were going to be installed in the treasurer's office. Right. And now we've got to the point where we've got more than $5,000 worth of new cameras that are looking to be put in. And these cameras are going to be monitored out at the control center in the jail. And that's it. If we put anything else in this building camera-wise, there's no provisions that those cameras are going to be monitored at the sheriff's office.
Sure. Well, my question for any elected official, and I, you know, I think we as a board work really, really hard to recognize the nature of being an elected, a county elected official, and the rights that you have therein. But my question would always be, okay, you're responsible for maintaining within your budget, within what is budgeted and what is appropriate for you. Can you do that and still buy these? That's the conversation we have with the sheriff when he wants to do something. John, you and I talked about that on washers and dryers at the end of the year. Can you absorb this within your budget? Help us, Jessica. Where are we supposed to go in something like this?
Well, I think you're going to want to acknowledge the equipment before you enter into the service agreement for the equipment. That would be my advice, because why would we enter into a service agreement if we don't have the equipment pinned down? My recollection of a prior meeting with the treasurer was that she came requesting a certain amount of money from the board for these cameras, and that the board declined that request initially. So I think, you know, I think acknowledge if she's found the money, or if the board wants to reconsider that, those are things that need to happen, and we need to get that pinned down and then enter into the service agreement. So I appreciate all the work that John's done on this. I just think we need a little bit of upfront follow-up so that we know what's happening before we enter into a service agreement. I mean, we need that equipment figured out. Do we know where the equipment money is coming from at this point?
That would be up to Renee, I guess, to see how she wants to.
I don't think it's been identified. I think, you know.
Because I think that'd be important, because my recollection of this meeting a while ago, and I haven't listened to the audio, but I was here, was that there was a request for funding. Is that the board's recollection? And that the board said at that time, no. I mean, I remember Mr. Toot saying, you know, I think we have a lot of places to look at, and at this point I'm not ready to designate any money.
Yeah, we didn't. The conversation is about the rest of the cameras that we're looking at for this building. I'm certainly not opposed to putting cameras in, and we're currently having that discussion. I'm a little concerned about having a separate system for the treasurer's office.
Sure.
And I haven't gotten the satisfactory answers about who's going to put the cameras in. And I mean, Cal and I had a conversation the other day. I think he's got questions about what's the role for his department going to be in the installation of these particular cameras that we're talking about. So I think there's just a lot of questions that are for me that are left to be answered.
Okay. Yeah, I'm with you. So it sounds to me like we need to defer action as a board. We need to defer action on this updated agreement and go to Treasurer Tweet and say, we need to get this resolved. You're an elected official. You know, you have your rights, but we have our responsibilities as a board, too. We need to get this resolved so that we can take action on this agreement. Jessica, does that sound about right?
Agreed.
Wayne?
So what is it that we actually need from her? The cost of these particular new additional ones, because it obviously is not the same ones that were the used cameras. From the
new cameras.
They're new cameras.
Correct. And,
correct.
And they're sitting in John's office waiting for somebody to put them in. So I would like to know what the cameras, what those cameras cost, and what the ongoing, and who's going to install them, and what the ongoing maintenance agreement is going to be. I think those are questions that we need to answer, or at least I need answered before I can move forward with it.
Good. No, that's what I was asking for, is just exactly what kind of information we actually needed, and obviously you can convey that to.
So then, Wayne, help me with what's the appropriate action here. Are we tabling this and referring it to Treasurer Tweet to work with John and Cal to answer
I believe
these
tabling
questions?
Would be appropriate.
Okay. If you want that, I need a motion to do that.
I would move that we table this for this time.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to table. Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. All right, it's been tabled. Direction that I'll give, and Cal, I'll give it to you since you work for the board. How about that? John doesn't work for the board. Renee doesn't work for the board. Direction is for you to pull Treasurer Tweet and Big John together and figure out what the story is on these cameras. Who's paying for them? Who's installing them? And come back to us next week with information so that the board can make a decision. Okay?
Thank you.
Board, we good?
Yep.
All right. Big John, sorry that we weren't able to take action today, man. We'll get to it.
Problem.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next item is discussion and direction to staff to compile amendments to the urban renewal plan. This is Leanne Harder. Hi, Leanne.
Shelley, could you hit the lights, please? Thank you.
How are you doing today?
Well, how about you?
Good, thank you.
I'm hoping my voice will hold out. Well, good morning. Before you are two agenda items that relate to the county's urban renewal plan. Let me get to the presentation. The first agenda item deals directly with direction from the board as to what amendments, if any, need to be compiled to the story, the urban renewal plan, Story County Urban Renewal Area. It might seem tedious, but work through this on a step-by-step process because this will be the first time since the plan was originally adopted in November 2011 that it has been officially amended. If you look left, I just want something for the public to know and the board as well. The amended plan that was on the board's agenda, is it just a draft template for the board to look at, to work through today? It looks just a little bit different because the copy that we were working with was an Adobe PDF, and so we had to retype it. And so that's why there's some difference in formatting.
We don't have software for you to convert PDFs?
Well, we converted, but we didn't then had to clean it up, too.
All right.
It does look significantly different in some areas, and I wanted everyone to understand why.
But the verbiage contained therein is the same.
Yep.
Okay.
So again, we're looking at possible revisions. Over the month of September, you have had presentations from nine different applicants throughout Story County on different requests that they have submitted. I have a few slides here just reviewing the schedule again and then going through, again, it will be tedious, but one by one possible changes. The schedule that you've seen several times, starting from today henceforward, today discussing proposed changes. If you do want to make proposed changes today, I need direction to place it on the county's website and also send notice via USPS, Postal Service, to affected taxing entities for a consultation meeting, which is your next agenda item for next Tuesday. We also have to have a legal notice published in the paper this coming Thursday. Consultation meeting, if you approve the next agenda item, would be next Tuesday. And next Tuesday would have a resolution setting the public hearing for ordinance that actually adds properties to the urban renewal plan, if that is the direction. And then it spells out beyond past that, too. So we'll be going, I'll be here almost every week throughout October if, again, you do decide today to amend the urban renewal plan. Are there any questions on the schedule? A lot of it is making sure we're meeting the requirements of our code of ordinances and Chapter 403 of the Code of Iowa, and Chapter 331. Okay. Again, I'm not spending a lot of time reviewing the applications. You've heard the applicants come forward and present the case, and you have the application materials and ancillary information they had submitted to me and the board through the month of September. But through the plan itself, Section 2, we'll get to that. So these are the possible project applications that could be added to the urban renewal plan. And then kind of switching gears, the board did ask me to identify if there are any wind turbines that have been constructed since the first urban renewal plan was adopted in November 2011. Six have been constructed. Actually, one was constructed in 2009 up by Story City. It just was not part of the larger wind farms that were added with the urban renewal area. Urban renewal properties. So there are six different. There are two in the Roland Story School District, one in the Collins Maxwell School District, and three in Colonesco. And these are not associated with NextEra Energy. These are other companies or individual property owners.
But they're the same type of equipment,
exactly.
Basically, and they have the same, it would be called incentives that we offered to the NextEra.
Right. Okay.
Would you repeat again? You had two in Roland Story, two
in Roland Story School District, one in Collins Maxwell, and then three again in the Colonesco School District. Any questions on those properties before I move on? Any additional questions? Okay. So going into the urban renewal area, the urban renewal plan, Story County Urban Renewal Area, which is cumbersome to say, the proposed changes, first one to look at would be the property to be included in the urban renewal area. So these are those wind turbines, or in the case when you originally adopted this in November 2011, the Vetter property, and then the two demonstration sites. So if there are any new properties you would want to add here, this is a add to the urban renewal plan. This is a section that would need to be amended and listed here. And
if the board were so inclined, this is where those new wind turbines would be listed.
Right.
I've got a question for you. Has there been any formal activity on new property that was just acquired out off Cameron School Road? Because there was a question about the possibility of using TIF here on that.
The new property owners or soon-to-be property owners are meeting with our staff right now on possible layouts. But that question was raised to me as well, and I said that was more appropriately directed towards the board.
Absolutely, and the only thing I'm questioning is the timing. Leanne, maybe we take a step backwards and you help me through this. So you're talking about, at this point, are we trying to include potential changes that the board may act on over the next month or so? I mean, is that where we are? So we would want to list anything
today,
possibly we could.
Yeah. And let me explain back up as well and explain why. Even though we amended the policies on this for amending the plan and receiving applications, the time frame is still very tight, especially when we get to the financing of the projects. So that schedule that I presented, there is no leeway. This afternoon, if you do direct me to make changes, I will be in lockdown mode compiling the changes and getting them to the printer, to our copier to send them out. So yeah, today, short answer, yes, today is a day that if you wanted to add things, we would add it. Or you would add it. Direct me to add it.
Good.
And it's not official action, though. That takes place
right,
in
we're
October.
Still taking official action a month.
Yeah, this
from
is
now.
Just draft so you can notify the taxing entities.
Good.
So this is a first change that would need to be addressed. Then going on, there is, if you add additional projects, you would have a new Section 5. The current plan has initial projects, and rather than amending that, I thought it would be helpful just to add the new Section 5 and then number accordingly the remaining sections. And the simply words, the Board of Supervisors has reviewed a number of requests submitted during August 2013 that would be consistent with objectives set out above and has determined that the following projects could be undertaken effectively during the current fiscal year and fiscal year 2015. And this is where you would add the new projects. Potential new projects. Right.
Okay.
And I don't know how if you want to discuss these one by one or if you want me to just go through the presentation, then go back and go through.
Yeah, go all the way through, and then we'll come back to the top.
You go the other way. And then item number six just changes. This is section number six. Roman number six is tax increment financing procedures. Changes the dates from 2011-2010 to 2013-2012. That's when you set the base values. For the new properties, right.
Is that reflected in there? I mean, are we going to be, because we're running both, right? Because this doesn't take the properties that we put in that 2000.
That is right. Lucy, you're right. I think what we would do is leave it as is and then add, for the new properties, it is expected that the county will incur debt that can be certified by December 1st, 2013, which will result in establishing base valuation in the urban renewal area as of January 1st, 2012.
Okay.
So in Section 6, where that this is proposed change, there would be two paragraphs or a second sentence that starts with for new properties added.
Okay.
Thank you, Lucy. And then item number 8, this is where you list out the general obligation debt, current constitutional debt limits, and the proposed TIF debt to be incurred. These numbers are on the screen or on the plan, are what's in there right now. That is dependent on the projects that you have. And then we would need to add probably a second table for the new projects.
Yeah, and I would just ask that we consider adding December 1, 2011 to the top of what would now be Exhibit A. So it says county tax parcel numbers for wind farm properties dash December 2011, just so we keep straight when these things were added, because I think that impacts the clock that's running on them.
Yeah,
this is the chart. So, Wayne, right at the top of the chart that you're looking at?
And yep. If you look at the bottom of that table, it says added properties October 2013.
Yep.
So where it says county tax parcel numbers for wind farm properties, that's where we could add November 2011.
Right.
So that it all references Exhibit A.
Exhibit A, but it's clear on when they were added. So if anything new was added, it would be clear that it was separate from what was originally put on.
Housekeeping item, Exhibit B was a reference first, but it actually came first. So, you know, just sequentially, it should be Exhibit A. And then that's what this is a snapshot of that we were just discussing. And then Exhibit A, which should actually be B, is the map of the properties. Even though I did the one in 2011, I never saved as a project, so I had to recreate the map. So that is a little bit of a change. And then we'd also, if you added new projects, we would have to include those on the map as well.
Okay.
So that's why the map looks different. The girl that's known to save everything did not save this one.
All right.
So those are your very, those are the just walking you through the types of changes you need to discuss today.
Yep. All right, so we take these one at a time right now?
Please.
Is that the way to do it? So the first one is changing there on number one from Exhibit B to Exhibit A, because we're going to make, if in fact we're going to make that change at the back of the page, where the chart becomes Exhibit A and the map becomes Exhibit B.
Yeah, so move.
Second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. That one's handled. Any new properties to be listed here? So right now we have Story Wind LLC and Garden Wind LLC and all those turbines, the two demonstration turbines right here south of Highway 30 and the Vetter Equipment property. My suggestion to the board would be that we add, was it six?
Yeah, six.
We add those six for consideration so that we're making full notification.
Right.
I don't believe that for this year we can add anything else, because I don't think the timing, and Leanne, I'm speaking to the meeting that your staff is having downstairs, I don't think the timing works to add anything else this year. That would be a conversation for next year. So I'm suggesting just these six. Board?
Yeah.
We've had those discussions before, so I would move that we add those six.
Second.
Motion and a second. Any other discussion on that? Any other additions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. It's unanimous. Next one is following property will be constructed, and we're talking about any new projects here. My suggestion would be any project that we've had presentations the last 3 weeks, any project that was included in those last 3 weeks be included on here as under consideration. Nothing else be
right.
included other
right.
than those things right. that have been presented to us at this point.
Yeah, the cost of the process and needing to have them listed, I would concur.
Is that a motion?
So move.
We have a motion and a second. Other discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Passes unanimously. Next is the insertion of item 5, additional projects. And again, that would be the same list that has been presented to this board already. Nothing new.
Right.
For consideration. I keep saying for consideration because I don't want anybody to get confused
right.
that we're going ahead and adding them here. We're just considering them.
Yeah. So board. Move.
Okay.
Second.
Motion and a second. Other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Passes unanimously. Leanne, if I skip one, let me know. We have an amendment to what you've proposed here. I'm calling it the Lucy Amendment, and that is that we maintain the original paragraph, so we don't make any of those changes, but, Leanne, we direct you to add a new sentence that reflects the changes that we're talking about here. Absolutely.
Second. Is that under 6? Under the financing procedure?
Yep, that's under 6.
I'm just trying to see if I'm following. Yeah, I'm following.
You with us?
Yep, I'm with you.
So we're going to keep that paragraph as it exists, Wayne, but we're going to add a new sentence.
Just to change from the dates from the 13th as highlighted.
Yeah.
The 12th.
Gotcha. But still.
And then add.
Right.
Yeah, gotcha.
Okay. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. It passes unanimously. Let's see. Next one is changing the Exhibit B to Exhibit A, which is a listing of all the tax parcels.
Yeah,
do we need to change what we're doing here, or are we all right? Okay.
Yeah.
Next one is the idea of changing Exhibit B, as it's currently known, to Exhibit A.
Right. And would this also include the added properties?
I was going to do that in a minute.
Okay. All right.
We actually have
change. Yeah. Okay.
Just from B to A.
So move.
Second.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Passed unanimously. Addition of December 2011. Beside county tax parcel numbers for wind farm properties that's already there. That would be new, not reflected in what we were handed.
And I'll move that addition.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Passes unanimously. Then we have added properties October of 2013. Which would include, at this point, the proposed 6 wind turbines that we saw on the screen a few minutes ago.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. And then finally, Exhibit A would become Exhibit B.
I'm going to dig my heels on that one.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So now we got 2 A's? Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
All right. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Passes unanimously. Is that everything?
We Section 8.
Okay.
The table on the general obligation debt and debt to be incurred. We need a new table for this year. That this would be labeled for December 2011. It's page 4. On the top of page 4. It looks like what's on the screen.
Oh, just I see. Well, you just
need
got
to add a new table for October 2013.
Okay, so the addition of a new table under Section 8, what is now Section 8.
Yeah, and I'll get the information from the auditor's office.
Absolutely, and important to recognize that none of these changes have been approved by the board yet. This is all proposed changes.
You made a motion, right, Wayne?
Yes, so moved.
I'll second it.
Motion and second. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Passes unanimously. Leanne, is there anything else that we need to do here?
Not specific on this agenda item.
Okay. Anything? Any
other
item?
You might want to take action to direct me to make these changes in place on the website.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
You're so directed.
Just making it work for yourself, Leanne.
It's in the schedule. I've already planned on it.
We good?
Yep.
All right. Thank you. Let's see. Next item is schedule consultation meeting for October 1, 2013 at 9 a.m. in the public meeting room in Story County Administration Building with all the affected taxing authorities and direct staff to send notice and copy of draft amended, which we just did, draft amended urban renewal plan via United States Postal Service. And the only thing I would add to that is please make sure that in your cover letter you use the word proposed about 17
right.
times.
Right.
Okay? Anybody got any questions?
No. Nope.
Discussion? We need a motion.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Please schedule the meeting. Get the notification to them. We done?
I'm still here for next item.
Yep.
Okay. No agency reports. Departmental reports. Planning and development report. Oh, good. We get to see Leanne. Planning and development report. Leanne Harder.
I'm going to recap from July to where we are currently and highlight the work program. I wanted to start out looking at some permits and statistics, and, you know, bear with me. I have a copy of the presentation. I'm sorry.
You really think I can read that?
No, that's why I made it.
Okay.
Oof.
Yeah, I need to visit the optometrist. I can't read this either.
You can't read this?
Well, the little tiny stuff.
You're going to have to go about halfway through.
Okay.
Because I failed to hand out for the other two agenda items. Go to the part where it says permits and statistics. Just a recap of where we are so far this year in calendar year 2013. I'll have a couple different. I'll go back from fiscal year as well, but I'll clarify that's the time frame in which I'm talking for which I'm discussing. This is the development review caseload we've had. I'm just building on from past 1999 through current to see where the trends have been. I said this a year ago, really, the early 2000s, we were really busy. And it did slow down a little bit, but we're getting back up there busy. We've so far this year had 7 subdivisions. That does include agricultural subdivisions, minor subdivisions, residential parcel splits, whatever. 2 rezonings, 7 conditional use permits, and in fact, the Board of Adjustment, the Planning and Zoning Commission next week or 2 weeks will act on 3 new conditional use permits for wind turbine installations for about maybe 10 to 12 new installations with more on the horizon. We've had 3 variance requests, 1 ordinance amendment, which has been that was how we had to process the codification project through the Planning and Zoning Commission. So for the year, we're at 20. Average annual caseload is about 30. So we're right on target for development review cases. On the next slide is lots that have been created, platted lots, since 2000. Since 2000, in unincorporated Story County, 153 new platted lots have been created. These are those that are being created for residential development purposes. They don't include an agricultural subdivision or an outlot, or a residential parcel subdivision, just the true agricultural or true residential subdivision. So far this year, we have Bella Woods with 15 lots, which, as you can see, is actually has been the largest subdivision we've had since Eagle Ridge in 2006.
But as a teaser, there's a meeting going on right now that could impact these numbers greatly.
These numbers will, if that does come through, these numbers will not look any at all like this. Next slide, floodplain development permits. For the year, we're about a total of 24. If you add our pre-construction phase permits, that's at PCPP, and then FP is a floodplain. That means it's been through the entire process. We've done the inspection. We've issued the permit. Last year was the record year with 51. That's because we had a lot of transmission lines and a lot of utility works that happened last year. And Darren had a number of culvert projects. Zoning permits. This year we are at 153 total zoning permits or preliminary development permits for the year and 117 zoning permits. Just in comparison, this time last year we had 71 preliminary development permits and 90 zoning permits. So we've had a record year thus far. I don't remember when we've had this many permits since probably the late 90s, early 2000s. Definitely the highest numbers are our accessory buildings and then our miscellaneous, we have issued 25 preliminary development permits for new single-family dwellings, and 17 new single-family dwellings have been already through the entire process and are through construction with a zoning permit. What that means for the average values for zoning permits for single-family dwelling and single-family dwelling additions over the past 3 years, and historically over past years we've been seeing an increase, but this year our average valuation for single-family dwelling is creeping up really close to $300,000, $284,500. Single-family dwelling addition is over $50,000 starting this year. So we have seen a $100,000 increase on our valuation over the past 4 years, and the year's not over yet. The next slide is those other, you know, types of permits we issue. So far this year, we've issued 26 agricultural exemptions, and that does include 4 single-family dwellings. I don't have those values. We've quit tracking those because people haven't necessarily always wanted to give us that information, and they don't have to. But we're on track for the last year, too, to meet or exceed last year's permits. So far this year for E911 addresses, we have issued 28 new addresses and 6 replacements and 2 address changes. So I doubt that we'll be at the 2010, and the last column on this should say 2010, I'm sorry, the 2010 and 2011 levels on that, but with Bella Woods coming in, we may be there. And then home business renewals, we've already had 4 this year, new ones, and we're only at 52 renewals. We still have 3 more months yet to go, though. Our revenues, this is, I'm switching years, fiscal years, just so you have a sense of where we were. The last column is actually fiscal year 2014 to date. The second to last column is last fiscal year's revenues. So what if you look at the slide, you definitely see our revenues have been our actual revenues have been exceeding our budgeted revenues for the past few years, if not exceeding, very, very close to, with the exception that year one, which would have been
wind turbines.
Yeah. Expenses, then, same 2008 through 2014 fiscal year to date. We've historically come in under. We are closing that gap. And this year, obviously, you see that gap very wide since we're only a quarter of the way through. And I do know that gap will narrow significantly, especially since we just put new tires on our RAV. So, and when you have a budget the size of ours, that even $800 is a hit. Any questions on permitting and development review thus far? Quickly on the work program, those items that are ongoing, these are those identified by Board of Supervisors on this first slide. Capital Improvements Plan, we have a meeting, the CIP Task Force, this week. We have 16 requests that we'll be looking at and scoring and then bringing forth recommendation to the Board of Supervisors for November, December, January on. Planning Services to Communities, we'll be wrapping that up October and doing some, and maybe even to November. I know I have some more work I have to keep on going doing with COLO and doing some outreach and survey work with them in December and presenting that to the board early next year. Downtown Facade Pilot Program was supposed to kick off in August, but to be honest, I have not had the time to put things together to bring it forward. I've done the research, and we're looking for a project manager in our department now to take that off my shoulders. So that'll be coming probably mid-October. TIF applications, you know where you are on that. The comprehensive plan audit, we will be bringing that forward earlier mid-October. Community vision fact sheet, I'm looking at some different alternatives with Iowa State to have them do some assistance on this. Goal setting sessions is finished. Zoning map audit will be coming to you later on this year with some potential changes to our ordinance. Economic development RFP has been completed, the RFP process, and you are well aware we are in the midst of the contract with AEDC. While I'm thinking of it, Drew did deliver to me today a couple of information sheets. You have the executive summary for the labor shed analysis. Mm-hmm. He will get to me digitally, too, and we can get maybe this on our website, ours as well. And then I do have the full report, too. So once I get those, I'll have those posted on our website. One-stop permitting needs assessment. We really need to have some discussions on that, but haven't done anything with that. And then CTAP, Community Technical Assistance Program, we finished in July. As I've been working with communities with the TIF projects or even our smaller communities with our community, our planning assistance, this program has come up. And I've encouraged them to talk to you three to see if there's an interest in continuing it again next year. Maybe if we do, I would like to set some policies and have some more guidance rather than how we approached it last year. But I think it was a very good program, very well received. And it was up to $3,000 or 30, somewhere thereabouts.
Yeah, the only problem that we have not the only problem. One of the problems that you need to make sure they're all aware of is last year and this year, that's a non-budgeted item. And mm-hmm. so last year we were able to do it based on the budget looking as good as it looked when we got into the late winter, early spring. And this year, since it's not a budgeted item. And so unless it's ever plugged into the budget, this is going to be a winter or spring discussion trying to figure it out. And I'm with you. I think it was a great program. I'm fired up about it. I'd like to be able to continue to do it, but it's going to be entirely based on how things are going.
Next slide is, well, any questions on any of those or program items? Those are the ones, again, you've directed us to add and go forward with. Next are the continuation of existing projects. I'm going to just tell you what's done here. Finalized scanning is completed. Annual report, EOC training, and county services listing summary are all completed. The other projects that are remaining are Connect Iowa, and we did get a report from AEDC, from their intern, on where they are on that. I think there's still some issues with the data gathering, so we'll work through those. The Tillabell Farmland Project, we've mapped ideal locations. It's now a matter of going through the procedures to see if we can find support from different entities. And then Community Gardens, looking at some different approaches on this one. Any questions on existing projects? Last one, new projects. Again, I'm going to just highlight those that are done, the subdivision regulations review, the e-processing applications, which I'll get to another slide on, our comprehensive review of CUPs, et cetera, our database cleanup, our letter and map change updates. Even it says ongoing is up to date, and the standard operating procedures done. Anyone can now take in and do those updates. Valuation charts are done. And then what remains is our Ames River Fringe Plan study, and we'll be meeting with Ames staff here again in the relatively near future. Publishing GIS layers online. Matt Boyk will be coming to one of our staff meetings, our GIS coordinator, one of our staff meetings here in the very near future to kind of bring us up to speed as some of the changes are on that and how we can use them to accomplish this. Enforcement cases, we have a number of them that we're working to clean up and determine what we can from the right-of-way, and so I hope by the time I come back here we'll have a lot of closed cases for you, whether or not that's just we can't enforce or we've gone through enforcement process with. E-911 addressing, that should be coming forward to you probably in November or so, some proposed revisions to that ordinance that are definitely necessary, and then Watershed Management Authority, Squaw Creek Watershed Management Authority planning. I do meet with the Technical Advisor Committee this Wednesday, and we're going to rank the proposals, bring them back to the Board of Directors of the Watershed Management Authority, and then bring it back to you for recommendation in the next couple weeks. Any questions on any of those?
No, only to comment, Leanne, again, I want to compliment you on the thoroughness of how you've laid things out and given us hands-on. And as I was looking back through this, unless I must have been sleeping some of the past years, but I think the actual looking at the valuations and where we are to date is something that I don't recall us having in previous years. Maybe it slipped past me, but again, this having this information at this point in time, and we haven't even gotten through the rest of the fiscal year, is really encouraging to kind of see what is happening in our communities and so forth. So I just want to compliment you and staff for putting this together in this form, in this document, so that, you know, I can go back through and kind of look at that and fully understand the magnitude of what all has taken place throughout this year.
Okay. Just a couple more wrap-ups. I already mentioned that our online payment is up and going. So that was done. I do want to show you what it looks like, though, if this works, and it should. It worked earlier. It's there's a link, and it's hosted then on another site, and it's storyepay.com. This is what it looks like when it comes up. I won't walk you through it, but basically for well and septic, any health department related applications, any planning and zoning, planning and development applications, you now can apply and pay online. You have to register. Again, won't walk you through this. You can select different applications. I think we're looking at adding other departments too. And then you submit directly to, it comes to Kristen and me in my office, and then I know Kristen, I think Margaret for the health department. We may have to invoice back, and we'll be talking about that with you on our fee schedule and possibly doing away with our sliding scales because it does cause that problem. But you can then, once you get the invoice, pay online by e-check or MasterCard Visa or Discover. And it's on the same platform that the Treasurer's Office uses for online payment. We've been receiving quite a few, and it's nice to have that as an option for entities too to have. So if you want to play with that, it's out there. If you want to submit an application, I guess the only one that would apply would be Paul. The rest of you are not under our jurisdiction. Other happenings, we've completed web EOC training, ESF online, ESF 14, that's the part of the ESF functions that our department long-term recovery is for which we are responsible. Online training. Held the Whirly Creek open house, and then we're now in the appeal period, as you well know. We're planning Leadership Nevada, and that actually started last week. The next session is coming up in a couple weeks, and then ours is November 7th, county government. And completed entrepreneurship and small business development class through OUEDI, and I think some other stuff happened in the past quarter, but I couldn't remember. Upcoming, we have the Iowa APA conference. Charlie is part of that planning committee. That's in Cedar Rapids, the end of October. We have COZO, County Zoning Officials, ISAC Falls School. Again, Charlie's part of that. IFSMA, Iowa Floodplain Stormwater Management Association. We have our first conference in Urbandale, October 10th. Leadership Nevada, again, the November 7th date. Keep that in your calendars. And then strategic planning class through OUEDI. Any questions? I know I've forgotten a lot.
Questions for Leanne.
What are you doing in your spare time?
Right.
Trying to remember my homework, and I am failing miserably. Not the class. I'm just not getting my homework
done. Well, I want to say before you get away that I would imagine that any time there is as dramatic a change in the philosophy of a board of supervisors as this one underwent with Paul and I joining the board and Wayne's encouragement and leadership of the board that we went through in 2011, I would imagine it impacts a lot of different departments, a lot of different elected officials in a lot of different ways. I will say unequivocally, there's no doubt in my mind that nobody has been more dramatically impacted by the change of direction and philosophy of this board than you, and I am so appreciative that you have met every challenge, every question, every request absolutely head on as professionally as you did. You take a look, I mean, you look around this room. This room looks different because of you. Our planning looks different because of you. Our long-term budgeting is going to look different because of you. You're doing a great job, and I just want you to know that this board greatly appreciates and greatly values what you're doing for the county. So thank you. Anything else?
No, thank you.
Thanks.
When are you going to get on COZO's agenda at Fall School and kind of update the other counties about some of the things that has taken place?
I think we'll accomplish that when we submit the article to Iowa counties. That'll do it.
Are you going to submit an next year or what's it called to ISAC for the county award that is generally given? It takes a little work, but you've got everything in place. Okay.
Not unless you all direct me to do that.
Well,
we need to see about the president of the supervisors affiliate pushing some of the stuff we're working on here.
Only if there's going to be a financial stipend that goes along with the award.
All right, other reports, discussion and update on health care reform. Oh, boy. Okay. Good morning.
Good morning.
Alyssa, will you please introduce your partner?
Sure. This is Debbie Dean. She is the broker that we've been working with for all of our products. We haven't used health insurance through them, but all of our long-term, short-term, and life products.
Debbie, thanks for being here today. All right, update us.
It's just a brief update. I don't have a lot of information because it's coming out rapidly. If you watch the news, a lot of the regs are starting to come out with the law, and some of the changes are taking place January 1st of 2014. So we've been staying up to date on most of the information. As you'll notice, the employer mandate that was supposed to go into effect has been pushed back. We are still using, the county will use a 12-month measurement period. I don't know if I've talked to you about that before, to determine the full-time employment status. The new health care reform says any employee that works an average of 30 hours a week over this measurement period, which we're using 12 months, a full year, would be eligible for health insurance through the employer. So we will be, you know, we're still keeping track. I've kept an eye on quite a few of our part-time employees to see how many hours they're working. Our seasonal doesn't look like that will be have any implications on the county. They do not work an extended amount of period to where they would average 30 hours a week. So I've had discussions with our departments that actually hire, which would probably be just conservation and secondary roads. They hire those seasonal employees. There are some changes to employer plans. It won't really affect ours. We already had these changes in effect, so none of the ISAC plans. I haven't seen any major changes to those plans that will be coming out with our next benefit year. I did get notification from Brad that they are working with an actuary to make sure all of the...
Brad who?
Brad Holton from ISAC. Yes. And make sure that all of the plans, the ISAC plans, meet the minimum value test. That is something that is required with healthcare reform. And just to give a little idea of that, it just means that the plan share of cost is at least 60%. So their benefits and what the plans pay have to be at least 60%. Just looking at a plan, I can't determine that. That's why they have to have an actuary do that. We have already placed a limit on our flexible spending account. We did that a while back. Since our plan year runs from January to June, we had to make that change before, you know, they pushed that one back a couple of times. So now, after December of 2012, plan years that start after that had a $2,500 limit. We were already complying with that because we changed that previously, so we didn't have to look at that. This Friday, actually going out with payroll, will be the exchange notice, the marketplace notice. That is mandated. They did push back. It's mandated, but they're not going to fine employers if they don't send it out. We will send it out. It will go out every individual, regardless of employment status. So even our temporary employees will receive that notice with payroll on Friday. They need to receive that notice by October 1st, and then new hires after October 1st. We need to get that to within 14 days, which we'll comply with that. As far as our plan, there are new regs that came out September 13th. So a week and a half ago, I have scheduled a meeting with a benefits attorney. She will be looking at our plan to see if that complies with the new regulations. We have a standalone cafeteria 125 plan, which is pretty unique. You don't see that very often. We do need to make sure that that will comply with the new regulations that are going into effect. That's about all the other stuff. I mean, there's mandates, there's individual market, all that stuff. I'm not going to talk about that just because that doesn't affect the employer.
The newspaper report today, and I didn't read the full account, it was talking about the fact that Congress may need to go back in and correct some information. They found that individuals' families, if they were not offered the family plan, that the overall cost could be much higher than anticipated. And so it was just in this morning's paper, and I thought I was going to mention it to you to take a look at that. I don't think it would apply basically to us in our situation, but there's so much information going on out there in terms of whether Congress will come in and tweak that now that they've recognized that there was an error that I would say it wasn't an error. There was something that wasn't caught when they drafted the original plan, according to this article, and that they need to go in and make a fix. Now, knowing how dysfunctional Congress is currently right now, I don't anticipate anything happening in the short turnaround, but I would just encourage you to check that article out and see if that has any implication to us as an employer.
Yeah, I don't think it does.
I haven't seen that article. I don't know if they're talking about the affordability.
Yeah.
Or are they?
It was a part of the Affordable Care Act, and one of the provisions in there that had to do with the individual cost for a family plan, and that the way it was worded, it could cost individual families a considerable amount if they had to go out through the exchange.
Okay, so you're talking the exchange.
Right,
the marketplace.
Right. It has more to do with the exchange. Yeah. As I said, I just saw it, and I wasn't in the best of moods, and I just said, well, I'll just pass it on to you and ask you to take a look at that.
Yeah, there's a lot of media out there. You'll also see where employers are kicking spouses off of their group health plans.
Yeah.
I think, was it UPS did that not too long ago? They're making some, there are, their employers are making some changes to their plans because of the new regulations. So
I think the biggest question that's out there, and I got a phone call yesterday morning at about 7 o'clock from a county employee who had got a phone call Saturday at 10 o'clock in the evening about our flex cash. And the rumor is that as of today, we were going to stop our $575 contribution to each employee. And I think we probably just need to make sure that our employees know that is not the case, that flex cash is not going to stop. If there's changes that we have to make to our what we do for our health care, those changes most likely wouldn't take effect until the 1st of July of 2014.
It looks like it's the plan year after January 1st of 2014 from everything I've read. I'm not an attorney. I don't make that determination. That's why, you know, we have sent stuff down to an attorney at Davis Brown Law Firm to review our plans, make sure the new regulations that have come out that we are still okay to offer flex cash. I have no idea whether it will be. Reading it, I do have some concerns with the way we do things currently.
I believe that's our intent, is to continue to do things the way we are. If
it's legal.
In fact, that's legal and we're allowed to. If not, then we'll have to have conversations in the future about how we're going to handle that.
Correct.
Debbie, anything to add?
No, she's covered it very well.
Okay. Any questions for Alyssa or Debbie? Any other questions for Alyssa or Debbie? Thank you for the report. Please keep us updated, especially as it becomes apparent of any changes that we have to make. If in fact we have to make any changes, let's make sure that we're given as much notice and as much conversation as we can leading up to any changes that might need to be made. Okay. Thank you very much. Liaison assignments and committee meeting updates. Wayne.
Nothing on a liaison assignment, but just briefly, the COSTAR committee met last Friday at ISAC building and so forth. And I just wanted to call your attention that the month of October will be the NACO Cybersecurity and National Cybersecurity Awareness Month. And COSTAR is planning to have a series of things that will be given out to the member counties regarding little things that they should be aware of or need to communicate to their employees about the potential cybersecurity threat. So, and then there will be some other ongoing things, hopefully in the fall school, that will address some of the proposed changes that COSTAR will be implementing. There will be a survey coming out again. It's kind of an extension of the earlier survey that took place, and we talked about specific kinds of information and who that survey basically should go to. And I think really the IT and the auditor's office, along with Alyssa, will probably be the main point of contact there, because the kinds of things that the information they want will primarily be handled in those two departments. So just a little FYI, and they'll hear more about that at a later date.
Super. Thank you, Wayne. Paul, anything?
No.
Pass on me. Public forum number two. This is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items not on this agenda. Board may not take any action on the comments due to the requirements of the open meeting law, but we may do so in the future. Anybody wishing to address us? I see Arden Griner moving to the microphone.
Arden.
Good morning, Arden.
Good morning, Arden Graner, Sherman Township. You're notified on these TIF projects, you're notifying the taxing authorities that are going to be affected. Do they need a 7-day notice on that, which you wouldn't quite have enough time to notify them now for a meeting a week from now?
I don't believe it needs a 7-day notice.
Oh. Okay. And on some of those other notifications, or were you scrunch them kind of tight? We're going a 7-day notification from meeting date to meeting date to meeting date. Looked like it was kind of tight. Also, on if you're adding on those six new wind towers, do those property owners need to be notified that you're doing this? I know in the past, several years ago on TIF in Hardin County, they were TIFing hog sites, and that the hog site owners were able to direct those funds, and the funds were actually directed to Ellsworth Community College, where they taught hog farm management.
Right.
So do these property owners have some rights to how their funds are direct, how their tax money is directed?
Jessica Leanne, do you have an answer for that? Hey, Arden, you want this? This is the report that Leanne gave. Yep.
The property owners do not get to designate the way that the TIF funds are used. That's for the board's discretion and decision-making.
Okay.
That's my answer.
Okay. Did we answer your two questions? All right. Thank you. Anybody else wishing to address the board on any topic? Announcements of supervisors. Wayne.
Basically, I will be a short meeting this afternoon with community service. They're having their regular staff meeting, and basically I'm just going to be promoting our United Way campaign for the county at that meeting. And then tomorrow, Thursday, I will be in Des Moines all day. This is where we will finalize our legislative policies. All the various affiliates that have submitted some things will be discussing any tweaking or changes, and that the schedule will take place at the ISAC office, and then hopefully they will be voted on at the fall school before they're actually presented to the legislature. So I'll be in Des Moines all day on Thursday. I'll be out of the office on Friday.
Well, thank you for representing us on that. Paul, anything?
The only thing I would have here in the very near future, we will have online applications available for Story County employment. So Alyssa's been working with NeoGov. I think we approved that last year in our budget. And she's been a little busy, but we finally got it going. It's not actually up and running yet, but as soon as the IT department gets done what they need to do, we'll be able to make people will be able to make online applications. And I think the only thing that this board will have to in the future decide is whether or not we're going to continue to accept paper applications or if we'll go strictly electronic. So that's a discussion that we'll have to have in the future with Alyssa.
Outstanding. From me, need to inform you guys that I had a really nice meeting with representatives from the City of Ames, Iowa State University, and local Fox Engineering discussing the research park. I don't know if you followed it, but President Leith of Iowa State announced the intention over the next 5 years to increase the number of jobs in the research park from 700 to over 5,000. That includes about a $12 million grant from the federal government to build a hub to that research park. If you picture the research park right now, which is along University and Airport Road, you're talking about encompassing more ground to the south of the existing research park, kind of over to the Ames Airport for that development. It is really being led by Iowa State. It'll be an Iowa State property, but obviously it has impact for both the City of Ames and the county in that there's a lot of county ground in there. So I was appreciative of it being included, and it's just something to keep on your radar because I believe there will be future conversations involving this board and future probably request of the county as that project moves ahead. Wayne, I know you attended some of the initial conversations there. I'm appreciative to you for doing that. They're going to push really, really hard. That's a big, big number that they're trying to get. So anything else for the good of the order? If not, I'd entertain a motion to adjourn.
Move.
Second. Motion of second. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
We're adjourned.